Welcome back, everybody, to the X-Cast. The truth is in here. I'm Tony Black, your host, as ever. And this week, I am joined by, once again, a very special guest, straight from the Irish podcast, Mr. Wayne Talbot. Hello, sir.
How's it going?
Pretty good, yeah, pretty good. Welcome back. You were last on in the episode about Gender Bender,
yes.
If I remember rightly, which is going back a few weeks now. This time, we're covering another episode of season one, which maybe doesn't get the same amount of coverage as some others. This week, we are talking episode 18, Miracle Man. Miracle Man is the 18th episode of the first season of The X-Files. It first aired on March the 18th, 1994, and was written by Howard Gordon and Chris Carter, directed by Michael Lang. The story sees Mulder and Scully encountering a religious healer who seems to have the power to perform miracles.
The woman on the table has a malignant tumor on her spine. This boy here is going to attempt to heal her by simply laying his hands on her.
Where'd you get this?
I came in from the regional office in Tennessee. The preacher's name is...
Reverend Calvin Hartley.
You've heard of him?
The boy's his adopted son, Samuel. He claims to have found him as an infant lying in the tall weeds on the banks of the muddy Mississippi.
Did you know that he also claims the boy brought a man back from the dead?
It's more than a claim. The man he saved appears as a regular attraction in the Reverend's tent ministry. The boy's been performing miracles every week for the past 10 years. Twice on Sunday.
Well, not according to the Kenwood County Sheriff. Local authorities think that Reverend Hartley and his son are a scam. They've been trying to shut him down for some time now, but without any luck. So they've turned to the FBI to try and get a prosecution.
For what? Fraud?
No. Murder. Watch the tape.
Lucy Kelly has the cancer. The doctors say it is inoperable. They say it is incurable. But I say to you that what the doctors cannot cure, the Lord can. Yes, indeed, praise God. Because God can work miracles. Today, the clear light of God's healing love is flowing through Samuel's healing hands.
20 minutes later, Lucy Kelly was rushed to the hospital. She was pronounced dead on arrival.
What was the cause of death?
I don't know, but it wasn't cancer. They've requested someone with a medical background to assist local police in the investigation. I know this isn't an X-File.
When do we leave for Tennessee?
So then, Wayne, out of 10, where would you rank Miracle Man? Is it a wondrous miracle or a dodgy faith healer?
It's somewhere in between for me. I think I'd give it around a 6.5 roughly. It's got some interesting character moments, but I think overall the story is quite lacking. I know it's one of when I was looking at it, I was like, I couldn't remember much about the actual episode, so I rewatched it, and I realized why I didn't remember it, because there's very little in it, to be perfectly honest with you. It's a very bland story, I think. It tries to be more than the sum of its parts, and I think it fails slightly.
It's not really very memorable, is it?
No.
It's one of them that, I mean, yeah, I've probably only watched it actually three or four times, which isn't, you know, in the grand scheme of watching The X-Files, I've watched things tons of times over the years. But for this one, for it to only watch it two or three times maybe in the entire 20 years or more, just goes to show how little I've been interested in revisiting it. And you're watching it, I watched it, I think, about a year ago when I did a season one rewatch, and it had been absolutely ages since I'd revisited it before then. And I remember just going, I'm bored. I'm really bored. Yeah. And I mean, I would give it, personally, I would give it a 4. I just think it's,
yeah,
like you said, it has got some ideas. It has got some interesting ideas, and it does cover something that is ripe, really, for the X-Files. You know, miracles and faith healers and all that kind of stuff, but it's just so plodding. You know, when you put it next to certain other episodes, even ones we've covered so far, it just
yeah
seems to take forever to go not very far, really.
Yeah. Well, like, I mean, it started off interesting. Like, I thought the opening sequence was interesting enough, where you see Samuel bringing a charred corpse back to life. And that actual charred corpse, that character, his actual attire in the show was probably the strangest thing about it. He looked like a kind of a weird carry-on version of the Nazi from Raiders of the Lost Ark. And it was like, it took me out of the story, to be perfectly honest with you, but he had his brimmed hat and his dark sunglasses and he's walking around in his cane. It just stood out to me that, like, you know, if there was going to be a bad guy in this episode, it was going to be him.
Yeah.
You know, it was like they telegraphed that from the start. But, it had moments. I mean, I put it up against, like, it was like a role reversal of Dana Scully's story from Beyond the Sea, where she was talking about her faith and the death of her father. And this one seems to be more like it was Mulder's turn to look at faith because of the involvement with his sister. But I think overall the actual story of it was quite weak. There wasn't much there really at all. I mean, it could have been easily resolved within a 20-minute like mini episode or something. It wasn't really great overall. The characters weren't that engaging. Like, Mulder and Scully do very little. They don't really have much investigating apart from wandering around the rooftop of a courthouse following an incident with grasshoppers. But there's very little after that. It all just falls into place neatly at the end, and then on they go.
Yeah, exactly. It doesn't really feel like there's much dynamism to the whole thing. It seemed to be a fairly good creative process, though. It was the first episode that Howard Gordon wrote without Alex Ganser, who'd left the series to spend more time with his family, although, he, as we said in a previous episode, he did come back subsequently briefly. Carter says that he remembers Howard came to my house and he said, "Help me out." So we went to my living room and put up this bulletin board, and in a matter of hours we came up with this story. Then Howard and I split up the scenes. I probably wrote about 45% and he probably wrote about 55%. It was a blast because Howard and I had never written together before. We had a great time, and I think it set the tone and laid a foundation for what is our relationship in the second season, I think, with Mulder and Scully and things like that. And Howard Gordon said that, you know, we had a lot of fun. It was one of those times when we were rushed and in crisis, and we wrote it fairly quickly. Now, they're spinning it as quite a positive. Personally think it kind of shows that their backs were maybe a little bit against the wall. Howard Gordon was stuck, and then they cobbled together and created something that was just a little bit of a damp squib, really.
Very much so. And I think there was also studio involvement as well. There was particular scenes that were shot that had like religious symbolism, like the character of Samuel, who was the faith healer, the kid who was able to lay on hands and heal people. He gets charged with murder and put in prison. And there's a scene where basically the local sheriff's guys beat him to death, supposedly. And there was meant to be a shot of him done up like strung up crucifixion style while they're beating the crap out of him. There was iconography that was cut and Fox didn't want it in the show. So I think they were met with that as well, which probably diluted any impact the episode would have had in the long run anyway.
Yeah, well, that makes sense, because in a way you kind of, I know I came out the episode thinking I think there was a better story in there than what they managed to pick out, and a better idea than the finished product. You know, and that's been a recurring problem with a lot of the first season of this show, actually, in that you have had episodes where, and we've talked about this on the X-Cast before, where you have a really good idea that they don't really know what to do with. And it happens more in season one than a lot of the other seasons to come, actually, which is a good thing. You know, it's very much them finding their feet. And, you know, the reality is if all of the second season had been like the first season, it may not have got a third season. You know, you know what I mean?
Actually, yeah.
But yeah, it is a bit of a mixed bag. And even though they enjoyed it, I don't think we maybe enjoyed it as much as they did writing it.
It was definitely, the process of putting it together was probably more enjoyable than the process of watching the story.
Yeah, which is unusual. and it's supposed to be the other way around, from what I know.
I mean, I know that there were moments, like, I mean, Scully, this is the first episode we get to see Scully do an autopsy.
Yeah.
This is her first autopsy on the show, which then happens more and more often later as the show goes on.
Wow, I didn't actually know that it was her first one. No way.
As far as I'm aware, that's the first autopsy she does on screen. 18 episodes into the show. I don't think she had done an autopsy up to that point.
I don't remember one, actually, thinking about it.
I liked the bits with Mulder and his sister. Whether it was a question that he was being made to believe that his sister was a part of the story, that his sister was believed to be alive, or that he was seeing things, he was hallucinating. Was Samuel influencing him? Was Samuel actually touched by God? Because there is a scene later in the episode where there seems to be a spirit of Samuel that comes back, but it's all quite ambiguous, as it is. Like, it's a lot of stuff left, open ended. But I mean, I thought it was good, and like, obviously that part of it was good. But Mulder's thing about his sister, which obviously will become bigger and bigger as the show goes on. But yeah, it just again, not to rag on it too much, but I mean, there was better episodes before and after it that kind of you forget about this particular one because, you know, better things came along.
Well, you know what's interesting? I recorded later episodes of the X-Cast before we've done this. And in one of them, I mention how Samantha hasn't been mentioned for like about 10, 15 episodes. And then I watched this and I thought, that's not right then. And I'm going to have to edit that out. But I'm not going to. I'm actually going to keep that in because the simple fact is I'd forgotten about this. I'd forgotten about this entire subplot with Mulder and Samantha. And that just goes to show how little impact it registers. So for me to actually completely forget that she'd been talked about is quite a key thing, really. But yeah, we'll get into this a little bit more as we go on. So let's use that as a jumping off point and talk a little bit more in depth. So the teaser is relatively short and sweet, relatively basic, takes place in the past, which not all the teasers tend to do. Usually there's an inciting incident in the present day, which gets Mulder and Scully involved, but that's not quite the case here. This one is, as you mentioned, Samuel healing the charred corpse of who we know, who come to know as Vance, Raymond Vance, later on. And I think the one thing that struck me straight away with this, apart from how it was quite a creepy moment with the the charred hand reaching up and, you know, back from the dead, was how well did they cast that boy in terms of the likeness?
Yeah.
I thought he looked just like Scott Bairstow, who played Samuel as an adult.
Yeah, no, it was. It was a nice bit of casting. And the kid was also suitably creepy as well. Ever so, he had this creepy look about him. Mm. Like his eyes, he was just the way he was just laying on hands and praying. And it was just, he seemed like a real creepy horror kid. And I thought that was a nice touch. I thought that was actually a really nice way of introing the show rather than having it something that happens in the future. Like you said, it's something that happens in the past. And I thought that was a nice way of bringing it in.
Mm, definitely, yeah. It was an interesting teaser. You know, it establishes the three key characters, really, doesn't it? You know, in Reverend Hartley, Samuel and Vance. But it's you get the immediate sense though that the boy is being manipulated by the Reverend, you know, don't you? I mean, him being there when he's raising the dead as such, immediately you've got that relationship there, haven't you?
Yeah, and I actually thought that was a nice when the story eventually resolves itself to a point, it's you instinctively, like, I don't know, maybe you do now in this day and age, but you instinctively distrust the Reverend.
Mm.
Straight away you think this guy has to be a fraud or a hacker, it has to be something, he's getting something out of this, he's not doing this based solely on belief.
Mm.
And you're expecting him to be a much darker character than he is, and that opening, it does give that thing, because he's very much like a commanding kind of character that is telling, like, say the officers on the scene of the firemen that, like, you know, let the kid try, because, like, what else is going to happen? If he's already dead, he's dead. Mm. But he seemed suitably creepy as well. So it had a slight ominous twist to it. But then, you know, and as the story goes on, then we get to see that character in a different light as well. But, you know, I thought it was a promising start.
Yeah, it was. It was a promising start. It was an intriguing little teaser. And when we get into the main episode, after the credits, we've got Mulder and Scully in the office in one of those classic briefing moments. But this time it's flipped in that it's Scully actually...
Yeah.
Briefing Mulder for a change about something that... It was interesting the way they did this, because on the one hand, Scully's presenting it to Mulder and sort of saying, I'm going to go and look at this because I've been asked as a medical professional to go down and find out if there was foul play in this woman's death.
Mm.
It's not really an X-File, but don't worry about it. But then on the other hand, Mulder knows immediately who Samuel is, who Reverend Hartley is. He knows about their supposed miracles. And then he's like, yeah, sign me up. I'm coming along. It was weird. It was like, on the one hand, Scully was sort of going, well, it's not an X-File, but... And then on the other hand, Mulder's going, well, it's obviously an X-File, so... I don't know. I don't know if you got that impression.
Oh, no, it did, yeah. And I thought it was a nice reversal, role reversal. It is always good when that happens in the show, because it does happen, you know, throughout different episodes where they have a slight role reversal in regards to, say, you know, Mulder would be the skeptic and Scully would be the one, look, well, I'm going to, because I want to investigate this. I actually think as well, because of the religious side of Dana Scully, there's that aspect to the character as well that I found interesting. I wanted to believe that that was also another reason why she was going to investigate it. But I liked the fact that she was the one shown in the video, and Mulder was like, well, in fairness, he was feigning ignorance on it because obviously he knew what the story was with the character. But yeah, and I thought that was good.
Well,
it
struck me that maybe Mulder actually keeps tabs on a lot of this stuff, you know, in that he's got like his feelers out for various things he picks up. I mean, I think it's later in the show that we find out that he reads things like National Enquirer and all these crazy magazines that just most of which is trash, but then he'll pick up the odd thing in there that's got the nugget of truth. So maybe this was one of those things where he's reading one of these magazines or he's looking at one of these, you know, early websites, and he's just picking up all this information, keeping it in his mind just in case. So it just struck me that he already probably suspected this was an X-File. In terms of Scully, though, you've hit on a point there that I was going to mention. That I don't know about you, but I felt, though, if there was ever going to be a subplot involving Faith, it shouldn't really have... I know they tried to do it with Mulder to be different, but it seemed more geared towards Scully. And they didn't really do a fat lot with that. There was the odd mention throughout the episode of her Faith, one or two. But apart from that, it didn't seem as important a case to her as it should have been. And later on in the series, these kind of cases were. So, I don't know, it just didn't feel right to me.
It definitely was out of character, out of sorts. And we'd already seen as well, again, it seems to be the one episode I always reference when I talk about the X-Files, but Beyond the Sea touched on it immensely.
That's not a bad episode to reference, ever, if you have to.
It's not. It's one of my all-time favourites, but it's a case of her Faith was definitely much key to that whole story. And yet, I found that this was trying to hit on similar points, this episode, but it was like the writers were trying to hit on the points, but then forgot about the fact that they were trying to hit on those points and didn't let Scully be the doctor and the believer. It was just a case of, it was Mulder who was asking questions. And this is why I think it was a role reversal in that regard, believing, like with the Faith side of it, that Mulder is not a believer, but he was questioning whether he should be or not because of what Samuel was doing and what he was seeing himself, which he knew more than likely to be impossible. But was willing to ask Samuel, is it true? Is it a trick? But yeah, I mean, I think Scully was very much sidelined in this one. She got to ask a few questions. She treated the Reverend and any of those people, obviously, with a bit more respect than what Mulder did. And I put that solely down to her religious beliefs as well.
I think there was an element of that they were still figuring out, from a creative standpoint, what the religion meant to Scully and how much they would push that. And obviously later on in the series, you know, it gets pushed a lot more when they realize they can actually do X-Files around her Faith and not just to have it. So, you know, you can understand that, you know, again, it's you make certain concessions for season one because it is early days, but it just felt like slightly the wrong story. It was interesting in that Gordon talking about the concept of Samantha being involved. He said if it was going to be an episode about Faith, every time we talk about Faith, a good subject is Mulder's sister. We thought about what would be a way for this story to directly impact on Mulder. What if he comes into contact with the character who has this gift, this power, who can look into him and see what's in the deepest part of his soul? It was an opportunity to revisit that. Could this guy with his power tell Mulder something he didn't know? It was another piece in the sister puzzle. Chris and I were wondering, is this thing going to work? The only problem with that is, I understand what they're trying to do there, but it doesn't really come across, does it? It's just, most of the time, it's just Mulder seeing a very sort of don't look now vision of his sister in a red dress.
Yeah, very much so, yeah. red dress
just running, you know, running off at various points. It was only really one conversation he has with Samuel, his last conversation, which kind of gets into the nub of that. It just felt like it could have been a little bit, if they were going to do that, it could have been a little bit more clear, perhaps. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's my main gripe with this episode, is that it just seems to be a lot of lost opportunities or missed opportunities, because they were pushing a storyline and then all of a sudden it would just go in a completely pointless direction. Like, I mean, and I felt that Samuel was quite schizophrenic as a character in the episode, because, like, as you said, when Mulder was asking him questions, he was quite, like, Mulder wanted to, you know, test and see if it was real or not. But I found Samuel in those situations to be quite dark as a character and quite resigned to his fate overall. But when he was doing the fate healing, laying on of hands, he was a completely different person. And seemed to believe in everything that he did and didn't question it, whereas in the other situations he did. I don't know. I mean, whether it's the fact that maybe they were reading off, because Carter did one part of it and Howard did the other part of it, like in different scenes, maybe the characterizations got mixed up or something. I don't know. I just felt severely that was the case in some points in this.
Yeah, it was a little bit undefined in that sense, in terms of what he was.
Yeah.
No, I agree with that. But when they first get to the town, he's not there, obviously, Samuel. It's just they see Hartley whipping everyone up into a frenzy. Not nearly as much as he does later on, but it establishes establishes what Hartley's doing in the town with his tent and everything like that. It establishes how Vance looks now, as you said earlier. Your description of him, which is really funny. And I thought he looked like... I thought he looked very comic book, Vance. He had a very sort of comic book villain kind of look to him. As well, as well as a comedy Nazi, but also that that sort of,
he looked like something from Below.
He did.
That's what he looked like. I mean, it was like I was going, is this guy for real? I expected to be a bit of horror behind it. I expected him to take off his sunglasses and to have white eyes or something or big scars, but there was none of that.
No.
So like there on the spot, the shock to congregation or something, but. No, yeah, as you said, he looked like well out of place.
But the whole thing just felt like it was a little bit comic book in the sense of, and a bit melodramatic. There was a few scenes like this. I mean, the scene where, you know, Vance goes to the cemetery when they're exhuming the body to try and get a better look at it.
Yeah.
You know, the way he's talking, he's got like a whole mob behind him, and it just seemed very, very over the top. There's one specific moment later on where I thought it was ridiculous, which was the courtroom scene where Samuel's up in the dock and immediately straight after an outbreak, and immediately Samuel's there shouting at the judge and he's banging his gavel and going, you be quiet and all this. And then suddenly locusts or whatever they were.
Yeah.
Grasshoppers. And like, I was just sitting there thinking, hey, this is right after an outbreak. This is the top of your act and it's mad. This isn't supposed to be funny. And I was sitting there chuckling a little bit, going, this is ridiculous. This is ridiculous. and I don't know, I shouldn't have been feeling like that. Did you feel that it was a little bit hammy, maybe, in places?
Oh, very much so. I thought the actual delivery, I thought that the whole idea behind it was a tad hammy as well, yeah. And I was waiting for Scully to scoff at it a bit more. And Mulder as well to scoff at it a bit more. Actually, I was waiting for Mulder more than anything else to scoff at it, but it just seemed to be like, you know, they left that to one side. It happened, and people just, well, like, I mean, the Reverend, it happens, and the Reverend and Vance just walk out of the courtroom, and they run into to the cop, the sheriff, who was easily the worst actor I've ever seen in
it. He was poor.
He was so bad. He was terrible, and that hat did not fit his head at all.
That's true.
Like, he was just, it was like they had cast a different actor and then he had to leave or something, and so they decided to bring the guy off the food truck in and put him in the outfit. He was quiet in most scenes, and any scenes that he had a line to say, it was just like, really?
He was supposed to be an important character in the sense that one of the reasons that Scully's there is because he suspects that Reverend Hartley is creaming money off people, you know, and running a big scam with money that he says at one point, you know, we could spend on schools and all this kind of stuff. And that he's got people like the coroner and his thrall. So he's on the case. He's trying to, like, ultimately, although later on we find out he's a bit bent as well. But you know, in terms of what he does. But he's trying to expose Harley. So you'd think he'd be a little bit more dynamic. And, you know, again, use that word. Everyone seemed half-soaked in this, unless they were either half-soaked or they were really hammy and really melodramatic. Or that, you know, the director, Michael Lang, turns everything up to 11. Or really, there's an element of cheese. Like the scene where they meet Samuel in the bar. It's the most bluesy bar I've ever heard. It's like in the background, and he's there, and you've got they all speak with that deep south kind of thing going on, you know, all that. And I'm just there going, this is just a little bit 80s, again, 80s cop show, which this does veer into sometimes this season.
It does. Yeah, I suppose it's early 90s, late 80s stuff. It hasn't found that, like, kind of middle 90s feel yet, because it hasn't reached it. But yeah, this episode in particular suffers from that. It's like a really bad episode of Law and Order.
A little bit, where
it's like they're hitting all the stereotypes and all the cliches bang on the head.
Yeah.
So when they go looking for Samuel, they find him in a bar and he's drunk and he's cursing his gift.
He's drinking whiskey.
and then he does the premonition thing about Mulder and his sister. And Mulder's freaked out, and he's like, how do you know all this? And it's a tad forced.
You know what that reminded me of? I don't know how familiar you are with Star Trek, but it reminded me of Cybok in The Final Frontier, where he goes, show me your pain. I can feel your pain. I was like, at what point are you going to do a mind meld on Mulder?
Mulder comes up and goes, what does God want with a spaceship? you're right. Yeah, very much like that, like Cyborg, like the whole, like, you know, let me share your pain. Yeah. It was.
And it's a really, you know, it's really, I mean, I do actually quite like Cyborg in that film, weirdly, but it's a cheesy idea, you know?
Yeah.
And it's so on the nose that it doesn't ring true. Nor does, after the courtroom scene where it all goes a bit loopy, when Scully tries to explain that away, I don't know if you remember what she says. She says, oh, well, this is you know, an area full of kind of grasshopper life forms. And Mulder goes, "That not in a courtroom."
Yeah.
I thought it was one of Scully's flimsiest sort of explanations for something that is clearly hard to explain.
Yeah,
and it just made me laugh, because you're with Mulder going, oh, come on, Scully.
Yeah, it was definitely grasping at straws, and I'm sure Gillian Anderson had problems saying, like, acting out that scene, because Scully did not look like, you know, a doctor at that stage, a doctor and an agent. She just looked like the bimbo companion who was meant to ask the silly questions. But, the courtroom scene bugged me, and also the fact that it was just left to one side then.
Yeah.
Like, nobody questioned it after the fact. And then the plot rolled along, and we kind of got to see different sides of different people. And yeah, I mean, it's like they keep going back to the tents. Then they go back to more, like, your man Samuel gets arrested, he gets released and on bail, and they bring him back to the tent to do more faith healing. And there's one particular girl there, and you can tell straight off that, you know, Vance is there in his full Nazi regalia, and, you know, handing out little cups of Kool-Aid to everyone. Like, it was so Jonestown Massacre. Yeah. It was crazy. But and you could tell straight off that, all right, well, this is it. This is the message here right now. This is the main plot point, that this is a special girl who's going to get picked, and she's brown bread.
Yeah, you can see it straight away, can't you? Interestingly, as a little fact about recurring faces in The X-Files, she later, an actress called Chilton Crane, who played Margaret, the girl in the wheelchair, she later plays Max Fennig's sister in the two-parter Max and Tempest Fugit in season 4. Yeah, you know, in almost every episode, as you know, Wayne, there's someone who's played a character before or will play a character again. And
there's revolving doors of extra actors in The X-Files.
Yeah. But yeah, it's... You're right about the whole, you know, you can see that kind of stuff coming. Chris Carter and Howard Gordon talk about fundamentalist religion, because obviously the whole thing is a commentary on the whole, you know, the preacher faith healing kind of madness that you get in America, you know, and you see these videos of these guys going, I will heal you, Lord, and they're all in a frenzy and all this. we said this is a show about belief, about possibilities. I think there's a power of faith. And so we set out right away to not do the obvious, which would be to make these people into buffoons. In a way, it was a kind of Jesus story. In a way. Our premise was, what if a prophet or someone with special powers was set down on Earth? What would happen to him? The thing is, there was a point just before that scene with the faith healing, where Mulder's talking to Scully in that hotel room, and there's a nice little bit of deflected dialogue when she asks him about Samantha, and he just completely doesn't answer the question. But he starts talking about what he thinks the paranormality is, and he's talking about things like energy levels, and the bad and the good. And he was so close, I think, to the Force. What does this mean? Normally, when he talks about paranormal stuff, there's a theory underpinning it. There's something you can label. I didn't get that from this episode. He was talking more about energy fields. And I was going, what though? What does this mean exactly? What is the basis of believing that?
No, then that was one of the flimsy parts about it. There's always, whenever Mulder is trying to explain something or is talking about an X-File in some way, he always has, say, a history. Like, I know this wasn't his case. Like, Scully brought this to him.
But he knew about it.
He knew about it. Yeah. So therefore, he would be like, well, you know, say in 1945, there was a case of this man, and he'd blah, blah. And he'd always have those history case files where it was like, this type of stuff has happened before, and people can't explain it, but this is what I think it is, or this is what some people think it is, and so on and so forth. With this one, it literally was a case of, he was there, but he wasn't really, he was half invested in the main plot. He was more interested in, obviously, in his sister.
Yeah.
And Scully was kind of just waiting for things to happen in order to do something.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, and exactly. Yeah. And it really felt odd. I also wondered if the vision of Samantha in the tent was a distraction, because he sees her and he goes off chasing her, and that's when Samuel does his healing/killing or whatever. And it just seemed a bit suggestive that he was trying to get Mulder out of the way. I don't know, because this is the thing, I didn't really know what Samuel was doing fully, or what kind of why he was doing what he was. I didn't really get that. And it, again, it's really muddled.
It is, no, it is quite muddled, because you see all the other people that he's laying hands on in that particular scene, and they're all, for, you know, as far as we're aware, he heals them, if at all. And then he gets on to the last girl, and then that, you know, it goes south because of the fact that, you know, something has happened to her. And I felt that, you know, they only ever had Vance as somebody who has been healed by him.
Mm.
And I was expecting there to be another subplot where Vance was actually a plant originally.
Oh.
So he was a disfigured guy who the Reverend, this is where I thought the Reverend was going to turn out to be part of the whole thing, but he wasn't. Like, I was giving the story way more credit than it deserved, I think. But I was expecting more twists and turns rather than just being going, well, it's clear who the bad guy is to me here, but maybe I'm wrong here. Maybe there's more to this. But I obviously was giving him more credit. I was expecting the fact that Vance would turn out to be already somebody who would have been disfigured. The Reverend paid him and brought him into his organization, planted him on the scene of the crime, and the kid was actually a fake all along. Because usually that's what happens. It's either, in an X-Files story, either something is completely disproven or it's left completely open-ended.
Yeah.
And with this, I don't know. Like, I mean, as the story progresses, there was no real evidence apart from the character of Vance that Samuel was a faith healer.
That would have been much more interesting, a twist. Mm. It would have been more interesting than the whole idea of this being a big Jesus allegory and a guy coming down and suffering and dying and being resurrected. What for? And this was my problem with it. I did like how, and this ties into the whole Scully Catholicism element, I did like how she talks to the coroner guy, who obviously has been on Reverend Hartley's payroll effectively, and says to him, look, your daughter's died. I can, you know, you can either completely trust in the godly explanation, or you let me do an autopsy. And I like that, because they did tie that into her faith and the fact that she has the respect enough to ask somebody who believes in the religious side of things to consider another side of things. And then he does the rational thing and he says yes.
Yeah.
I thought that was good writing. But
that was a good character moment for Scully, yeah. All right, definitely. She got to show that, like, she understood where he was coming from. She understood the scripture part of it, but also the fact that she is a doctor and she believes just as much as he does, and she could give him closure and a real reason for why his daughter actually died.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought that was probably one of the better parts of the episode.
Yeah, it was good. It was good.
Yeah.
One of the more ludicrous parts was, and you mentioned Scully's autopsy earlier, but did you feel that when it started and she was rubbing those knives together, it looked like she was about to carve a turkey?
Yes. Very much so. I was like, what is she cutting up?
It was weird.
This is a frail young girl who spent most of her days in a wheelchair. There's not much of her.
They were huge, huge yeah. knives that she was slicing together. Like she, that was really weird.
Yeah. I'm going to enjoy this. Chink, chink, chink. Yeah, that was a tad weird, was, all right. That was a tad weird.
She got better at the autopsies, I think, as time went on, the more she did. She didn't use big knives as much. She went to scalpels and things.
Proper instruments for autopsies.
Not turkey.
I don't think she was doing the Y incision with that cleaver thing that she had. So.
At the same time as she's doing this, you've got Mulder going off to speak to Samuel and having, you know, his last final quite intense conversation. You brought this up earlier, but I think yep. Scully's just mentioned about how, and I like this was good as well, in that Scully mentions how people can fall into the trick of believing because they want to believe. And Mulder does that completely with Samuel here. He goes there, he wants to believe so much that he has an answer about Samantha. And like you said, yeah. he asks him, he says, is she alive? Is that what you're trying to tell me? I mean, the rational side of him would have known Samuel doesn't know, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like, what? Why would Samuel know that? And it's that whole thing of, is Mulder seeing what he wants to see? Is he being given visions as a distraction? Is he being played a trick on? Like Scully says. What do you think?
Yeah.
Do you think there's an answer there, or do you think they didn't know?
See, that's the thing. I don't think they, like you said, Samuel wouldn't know. So it was, but Samuel was playing it off on Mulder as if he was taunting him, like, you're a non-believer, so I'm not going to give you any kind of answer. I'm just going to play with you.
Mm.
And that's the character moment that I found a bit weird with Samuel, because he was meant to be this young kid or young man who had the ability to heal and this belief in good. Yet when it came to Mulder and Mulder's questions about his sister, he answered his questions with more questions.
Mm.
And I don't think it was, for that particular character, I don't think it was a good character moment. For Mulder, it was an interesting character moment because, you know, was he questioning the fact that, you know, is God doing this? Is the religious aspect of it real? Or am I being played here? Is this some sort of trick in order to keep me away from the real issue of the killer that's actually out there? Because he knows at that point that Samuel didn't kill. So he's like, I mean, the scene was interesting, but I think it was also, it could have played out a bit better in regards to the way Samuel's character was portrayed. And that's where I personally believe that's where one of those moments where one of the other, like, the writers were writing separately to each other, and that one particular character moment, it made it into the episode, but it was a bit off
yeah.
for that particular character. But I think, you know, I think Mulder at the end of it wanted to believe something, but it definitely wasn't going to be the religious aspect of it.
No, exactly. And you know, I'm all for Mulder believing and being led by people and actually, you know, having that side of him corrupted. I think that's great. And when that does happen in the show, it's really good. But it just didn't feel like the right kind of corruption. And it always worked much better when he was buying into the belief of conspiracies or people like the Smoking Man and all this kind of thing, where they're actually telling him things he wants to hear, showing him things he wants to see, and he buys it, you know, like in season 5 when Smoking Man gives him back his sister, and it's not her, obviously, but Mulder's so ready to just envelop her and invite her in, and then she's the one who backs away. Otherwise, he would have, and obviously we'll get into this much, much further down the road in the X-Cast, but he would have accepted that she was his sister without question.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's things like that. It just didn't feel like the right episode to do that, this one. And it felt a little bit like a lost opportunity when it could have been weaved into maybe even more of a conspiracy episode to make it even more interesting at this point. But you mentioned obviously earlier about how there was a lot of network interference and the following scene, which is Samuel getting beaten to death. And consequently, you do have the religious, you know, silhouette of the Christ.
Yeah.
But it doesn't it doesn't sell the idea that he's been beaten to death, I don't think, does it, in the final cut?
No, no it doesn't. No.
You just think these guys are going to give him a workover.
That's it. That's exactly like the one I was watching. All right, they're just going to beat the crap out of him. Okay, fine. But then it's like, oh, no, he's actually dead.
You're like, what?
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And then like, following that very brief head kicking that he gets, you go to the scene where it's the sheriff telling Mulder and Scully that he's dead and there was an altercation and he fell and blah. Like, and delivered with such terrible acting ability and bland lack of reaction. It's just like, oh, okay, fair enough. And then the Reverend and Vance turn up, and the Reverend is the most passionate you've seen anyone in the episode so far about the kid. And you feel sorry for him because you can see that he actually did care about him. He did treat him as his son, and he did want him to be okay, and he wanted him to be able to continue doing what he was doing. And that's when that happened, I was like, okay, well, this guy obviously is not part of the bad part of the story. He gave a damn about the kid.
Hmm.
So, and then of course, then creepy comedy Nazi Vance steps in and is all like, you know, come on, we have to go tell the congregation, and off they go. Like, but yeah, and then you see Scully as well. Scully gives her condolences and very heartfelt as well, I think.
Oh yeah, she's definitely, she's not faking that.
No,
I think though that you've hit the nail on the head here when you said that it's just really sort of delivered in a kind of flat way. The rest of this now, it was really weirdly paced for me. I just don't feel like it was any kind of conclusion, traditional conclusion. If anything, the pacing seems to go down, and it becomes a very really dragging sort of connect the dots of a basically a murder, you know, poisoning case where you obviously find out that Vance was lacing things with cyanide. And you've got these really dull scenes where Mulder and Scully are looking for an explanation and going onto a rooftop and things like that. And you're thinking, oh, my God, how is this so boring?
Yeah.
And then he only becomes slightly more interesting when you see Samuel and he's got this weird glow around him when he comes.
Yeah, he's got the Force aura glow. He looks like Obi-Wan from The New Hope or something. Or from Empire.
The Force ghost.
That's what it is. Like, yeah, he's a Force ghost. He's like telling Samuel he needs to go to Dagobah. But that's the thing. Like, it's a case of, like you said, we revisit the locusts or the grasshoppers because they go to the courthouse looking for clues. What has that got to do with the murder?
Yeah,
you know, like I know they went there looking for clues and they find the grasshopper and stuff like that, and they go up and they go look at the roof, and it's obvious that somebody dumped thousands of grasshoppers into a ventilation shaft. I would have thought that when I was in the courtroom looking at them coming out of the ventilation shafts, that somebody had dumped them in there. So I think the fact that they take half the episode to go back and look into that as any form of evidence.
But they try and shoot that. This is the thing, they try and shoot that scene to make it look weird, you know. Mm. And then you have Scully come up with an explanation that is a bit ridiculous, and then Mulder goes, well, no, it can't be that. But then at that point, they don't go, well, they've come out the vents. You know, and it leaves you thinking that this is all, you know, God's weird work until the end, when it all kind of becomes much more of a procedural cop thing, and you're like, oh, okay. So you've got the weirdness of Samuel's Force ghost, and then obviously at the end he walked out of the, you know, the morgue, and he's alive. He's the risen Samuel.
Yeah.
But apart from that, you've just tried to layer in some atmosphere with a big storm when he comes to see Vance, and Vance having a very sort of, oh, he believes me, death, or whatever he says.
Yeah.
And then Scully does a nice little connect the dots field report when they struggle to articulate the plot, they just wheel in one of these and then go, well, just explain it all for the audience. But it doesn't really have an ending. It just feels like it's just connecting the dots up, so you need to know what you need to know by the end without any real punch. It's like, I think I remember looking, there was like 41, 42 minutes in, there's this really sort of flat scene where Mulder just talks to a morgue attendant about what she saw that feels like something you get in 5 minutes in at the start.
Yeah, and I was like, very much so.
Is this the ending? Really? This is it?
Yeah. I was expecting to get like the start of The Incredible Hulk or something, like, you know, where Samuel's walking along an empty road, hitchhiking, and you just hear like, like, that's what I thought the ending was going to be.
That would have been good. Yeah.
But like, even on from Like, it was weird. Like, it felt like some of the scenes are actually out of place in the story because they should have been earlier. Like you said, that one should have been 5 minutes into the show. Like, I think if Samuel had died, and that would have been the plot where he would have been dead, but he's been seen about the town or something by people. Mm. That's interesting. Mm. But also, the fact that the sheriff at that point goes, this is a lot of horse shit, and leaves, and then goes back home to his wife who has arthritis, and he ignores everything she says because... It's like he feels guilty or something because Samuel wanted to help heal her. This is a plot point that was dropped line earlier, that Samuel wanted to help the sheriff's wife and heal her from her arthritis, but the sheriff wouldn't allow it. And he goes off home, and then just before the episode ends, you see his deputy come knocking, saying that the district attorney wants to talk to him about Samuel's death. Even though at this point we know there's no bloody body and Samuel's gone.
Yeah, there's no way they could really prosecute that in the end, really, surely, would they? Because no, if he's not there and there is suspicion he's not dead, then...
There's no body of proof then.
Yeah. But you said, it feels like they missed the whole trick by having the whole element of, you know, healing his wife. And yeah, I get the idea that he feels guilty because, like you said, he could have done something to help his wife.
Yeah.
But... that doesn't feel like the right payoff. You know, there's a lot of things that don't feel quite like the right payoffs. It's like they chose the story paths that don't work as well. So, and then when you forget the final moment where Mulder basically admits that he thinks he saw Samantha because he wanted to, and that's in a way, that's the arc of this for him. It's very much a case of, you know, he shouldn't be so quick to believe and see things he wants to see. But then he sees her again. And you're like, well, all right, what are you trying to say? What are you trying to say? Is it this idea that he will always see her, that he will always believe, and that he'll always be looking for her, which we know?
Yeah.
Or is it that someone's still fucking with him? I don't know. I really don't know.
Yeah, it is hard to tell where they really want to go with that whole point. Like, at least the last time when he sees her, he doesn't freak out.
Yeah.
You know, and go off running off into the town trying to find her.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was so up in the air. It was so all over the place, and just like, you know. Is Mulder seeing things? Is he going crazy, or is this just it's just a plot device that they're trying to make it seem ambiguous? Who knows? But yeah, it was a weird ending way to end the episode. I felt
didn't really work. No. Which I would say in general about this episode, really, I think ideas wise, Miracle Man's got a lot there. It's got some interesting things to say about faith, about religion, about the two leads potentially. But
yeah,
it's just got a really sort of leaden script. The direction isn't particularly great. Some of the acting, like you said, is a bit dodgy. And it just doesn't really ever take off. It never gets out of first gear all the way through. You know, there are certain episodes of The X-Files, even in season one, where you really feel it ramping up. You feel the excitement, you feel the tension, you feel the weirdness, you feel the sheer sense that they are building to something. With this, it was always just the one gear. It was always just like, oh, well, this happened. Oh, and this happens. Oh, okay, there's this. Now they're going here. What's that mean? And it's all the way through, you're going,
yeah.
When's something going to properly happen here? When's it going to kick off? And then just at the point where it could have maybe done, it just flatlines again. And even though it's not terrible, like a couple of the episodes have been really bad, and this isn't really bad, but its averageness really bums me out because it could have been better.
Yeah. It does have the elements of a good story, but it's just the way it was executed. And the way it was put together didn't really feel great at all.
It's a shame. It is a shame. But thankfully, there are episodes along similar-ish lines about religion that they do better in time. So this is a dry run for something that he's done better in the future. So, that's Miracle Man then. Okay, for our next segment, I'm going to ask you, Wayne, about our specific paranormality of the episode. So I'm going to simply ask you, Wayne, do you believe in miracles?
No.
Done.
End. I think miracles are just the overall idea of a miracle, particularly in this sense, say of laying on of hands. I think it's all poppycock. I don't believe in, like, I think. There's no such thing. I think it's people taking advantage of less I don't know, more not so much gullible, but somebody who's looking for something in life to fill a hole in their life, and they're looking for something to just work, and they see it as a miracle. So no, I don't. Like I'm not a believer in it. Like I'm an atheist. So I mean, at the end of the day, that's never going to be a case for me. Like, you know, I don't believe in holy miracles. So,
well, I was actually going to ask you if you were a religious man. So yeah, if you're an atheist, then it even goes against that. The very definition of miracle is described as an event that is not explicable by natural or scientific laws. Such an event may be attributed to a supernatural being, a deity, magic, a miracle worker, a saint, or a religious leader. Informally, the word miracle is often used to characterise any beneficial event that is statistically unlikely, but not contrary to the laws of nature, such as surviving a natural disaster, or simply a wonderful occurrence, regardless of likelihood, such as a birth. Other such miracles might be survival of an illness diagnosed as terminal, escaping a life-threatening situation, or beating the odds. Some coincidences may be seen as miracles. And that's something, you know, with all the most famous miracles that you hear about, quite a lot of the religious ones that go back to the supernatural ones that go back to the Bible, you know, people being healed. Yeah, the very idea of what Jesus did, you know.
Yeah.
All the miracles he did, turning the water into wine, and Moses parting the Red Sea, and all these things. Even the ones that are attributed the modern day, you do have a lot of talk about when the Vatican classify what a miracle is. And you go, well, how can you classify anything?
Yeah, you know? Yeah.
It's just, it's really interesting. It seems such a, something you can attribute to so many different things that there's no way to, obviously with religion, there's no way to prove any of it, but there's no way to prove it, is there? There's no way to prove what a miracle could be.
No, there isn't. I mean, and it's like the list that you gave there, the descriptions and stuff like that. Like, yeah, I mean, sure, defying the odds is always a thing. Coincidence is always a thing as well. I just think the idea in the sense of, say, what this episode covers is a miracle. I think that type of stuff generally seems to be just people taking advantage more so than anything else. So I mean, in the regard of the way it's done in this episode, definitely I don't believe in it. I've seen many a story where people have beaten the odds and they have, you know, overcome great strife or illness or whatever, and I put that down to the human ability to be able to overcome those things, and also the intervening power of science and the medical science and stuff like that. So yeah, I mean, there's always I'll be the Scully in this situation. I think there's always a logical explanation for that. So
I think that's a good way of looking at it. This is obviously, again, it goes back to faith and belief and what you believe in. You know, everyone, people will listen to this. Some people will be religious, some people won't be.
Yeah.
Obviously, you know, it's all down to what you believe, really. But
it's
an interesting one. And in terms of this, they do get into this area again in the X-Files. So it'll be interesting to revisit it down the line. Okay, so finally then, we're going to go into the quiz, the X-Quiz. Which I'm sure you've been looking forward to no end over the last few weeks, Wayne.
Oh, yeah.
It's what most people live for. So I'm going to ask you 5 questions and a quote from Miracle Man. So are you ready?
Yeah.
Brilliant. Let's do this. Okay. Question 1. What is the name of Reverend Hartley's church?
What the heck is it? I was looking at it and I was like, oh, I can't remember.
I'll tell you, it's the Miracle Ministry.
Miracle Ministry. I should have guessed that one, really, shouldn't I?
Well, it's one of them though. It's right in your face. It doesn't always register. Where did Reverend Hartley claim that he found Samuel?
Where did he claim he found him?
He tells the story at one point of how he.
Sitting down. They're in his office and he's talking about them.
Mm.
Again, I can't remember. Okay. Geez. I know the scene and everything, the story's told. He's sitting there in his office with Mulder and Scully talking about the kid.
He says.
He adopts him, I know, but he's not. It's not his kid, but. I can't remember.
I'll tell you. He says he found him in the tall weeds of the muddy Mississippi.
That's right, yeah. Yes.
Which gives.
Because Scully says this at the start as well. And she talks about the fact that he was found like Moses in a basket type thing.
And it gives him that whole mystique. Yeah, exactly. The whole Moses in a basket thing, you know, abandoned. Okay, question 3. Name the woman who has cancer in the video of the Hartleys that Scully shows Mulder at the beginning.
Jeez.
She's mentioned in dialogue a couple of times, but only towards the beginning.
Yeah. It's. I think her name is Anne something. I can't remember. I could be wrong, but yeah, I don't remember.
Lucy Kelly.
Lucy Kelly. Jeez.
Sorry, I think my questions are really hard.
Well, that's a tough one. That's a tough one.
Okay, question four. Going back to the tent. What is the slogan on the side of Reverend Harley's tent?
It's Samuel Heals.
No, it's not. No. Well, that is one. That is one of them. There's another one that is on the tent.
Oh, I don't know.
It says, "Come as you are, leave as you always wanted to be."
Oh, I'm there. Okay.
But I'm sorry.
Isn't that a lyric from "Come as You Are" by Nirvana?
It could. It... I hope so.
It actually is.
I hope that they've got that in there as an inside joke.
That is actually a lyric from Nirvana's "Come as You Are." It's like,
oh, brilliant! That's an in joke then. Oh, I'm glad you told.
Unless Kurt Cobain got that from religious text. No,
he could have been. Maybe he did. It's possible. Yeah. Question five. Then, what is the name of the town that they visit?
Oh, it's, I think it's Clarksville or something. Is it not?
It's
Clarksville, Tennessee or something, isn't it?
Oh, I really want to give you the point. It's Kenwood, Tennessee.
Kenwood, Tennessee?
Yeah.
Okay.
But you're on the right lines of it being a K stone.
You want to hear a funny story, though? The version that I have of the X-Files Season 1, it's a German DVD.
Really?
So all of the text on the towns are in German. So it's and it has everything else is in English.
That's brilliant.
Like the towns are done up in German, I think.
That is mad.
That's why I had a hard time knowing where it was. I thought it was Clarksville or something.
You get away with that then. I think more than anything else.
There you go.
Okay, question six. This is a chance to get a point off the board.
Okay.
So this is the quote. Okay, so who says it to who and what scene? So no, wait. This is the part where they bring on Elvis.
Mulder says it to Scully.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to remember if it's when they're in the tent or if it's at the start when they're watching the video.
It's in the tent. Yeah.
It's in the tent. One. Yeah. They're in the tent. And yeah. I think it's one of the first times they arrive in.
Yeah.
And that he just, they're all lined up. It's typical Mulder smart ass comment.
Yeah. He says, when Reverend Hartley's doing his first sermon. Yeah. He says,
yeah.
Okay. Well, that's one out of five. That's
terrible. That's absolutely terrible.
I was going to say.
I mean, I did much better the last time.
I was going to say it's not like none out of five. So
yeah,
it could have been worse. You'll get a chance. You'll get a chance to do it again. Don't worry. But yeah, okay. That was the X quiz. So that brings us to the end of Miracle Man. Just leaves me to thank you so much for coming back on again, Wayne. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thanks for having me. It's always good fun.
Oh, cheers. Yeah, you'll be back, hopefully, all going to plan for a few episodes in Season 2.
Excellent.
So it'd be great to have you back on. Until then, where can people find you and find the Irish Pubcast, your little baby?
Irish Pubcast is on geekplanetonline.com. And we have a Facebook page as well, Irish Pubcast, and Twitter account, the Irish Pubcast. We are doing a lot of local panels of late, based off, like, say, superhero stuff in conjunction with Forbidden Planet here in Dublin. So we've done two recently. We did one for Batman versus Superman, then we did one for Civil War, and then we have one coming up about X-Men, which is happening on June 15th. But awesome. Yeah, so they're going to be available on the X-Men one will be available on our podcast feed, following that particular panel. And then we're going to be at Dublin Comic Con in August. We run all the panels there for the Dublin Comic Con themselves. They get us in to host them and run them and all that type of stuff. So that's in August.
Oh, so much cooler stuff happens in Ireland now. Whenever you come on, you tell me about all these great things that are going on in Dublin. And I just can't go there. It's a real shame. But if you are listening to this in Ireland, what are you doing? Get over there. All right, it's awesome stuff. It's brilliant. You can find us at the X_cast on Twitter and on Facebook at the XCast. We're still posting various different things and keeping the episodes going. We've got a few more left till the end of Season 1, so keep on going. We've got We're part of the Black Hole Media podcast network at Black Hole Media on Twitter and on Facebook. Look us up for other podcasts about film and TV and various different things like that. And yeah, we're on iTunes. Subscribe, leave us a review, that'd be lovely. One day we are going to give away Matt Lamborn's Season 6 DVD. It's becoming a running joke now. And that we can't even give this thing away. But if you give us a review, first person to do it gets free stuff. So, you know, what more do you want? So, yeah, one more thanks, Wayne. Cheers for coming on.
No problem at all.
We'll see you soon, guys. But remember the immortal words, as ever, trust no one.